You are listening to the Tour des Flâneurs, the cycling podcast at the 2021 Tour de France, powered by Super Sapiens, energy management for committed athletes and coaches. Stage 18, today we're in Lucerne-Didène.
Mitch, that was the Tour de France. We're in a little village at the foot of the Tourmalet. They've just come off the descent of the Tourmalet. They're about to start climbing up to Lucerne-Didène. And we just thought we'd take in the roadside experience, didn't we?
Yeah, it's awesome here. It's like watching the anticipation. The cars coming past for 10 minutes before. By the time the riders come, it feels like it's going to be a bunch finished. And we're just at a simple corner.
They came through here pretty fast, but a big, big crowd has been out for quite some time. There's a big screen set up as well, so we've been watching the race and maybe go and watch the climb now. David Godu was out in front, didn't have much of a lead, and the group behind him that was chasing had been absorbed by that bunch, led by Ineos Grenadiers. Your man, Rigoberto Urán, in a bit of trouble today, isn't he? I think he's a couple of minutes off the back.
I think, yeah, but he looks like he's back in that group. Did you not see?
I think he got distance again before the top.
Okay, yeah, that's not looking great because there's some normal riders in there, like Michael Charas are in there and, you know, Dylan Van Baal. So it's been hard. I don't want to underestimate it, but it hasn't been overly hard. So clearly not on a good day.
And Ruben Guerrero was up the road, and I think he's still in that main group. Here comes Urán now with a couple of teammates helping him in a group of about 20 chasing. But, yeah, clearly a bad day in the chances that he had of the podium maybe just slipping away.
Yeah, it's really sad to see the team split in half. Obviously a few guys in that front bunch still trying to go for the stage win, and a couple of guys back with Rigo, but that's like Magnus Cort Nielsen, a good climber in his own right, but he's not really a pure climber, so it sees that he's really on not a great day.
Shall we go and watch the denouement of the stage on the big screen?
Let's do it.
Well, Mitch, that was you and I in between the climbs of the Tourmalet and the climb up to Lucerne-Didène. Beautiful climb to finish today's stage. And we have convened now in the early evening with François Thomas again. Hello, François.
Hi there.
Where are we, François?
We're at Le Viscose. I mean, if you've been listening to the podcast for some years, you know that we try every year when we're on the Tour de France, especially in the area close to the Tourmalet, to go to Le Viscose. I know that some of you listeners have been to Le Viscose for dinner, lunch, or at, you know, after riding the run in the area. It's it's like a second home. It's my Pyrenees home in many ways, and we've been received in style by the by Aurélien, who is the son of the owner and a very keen gravel rider. He's got a club called Gravel Pyrenees. If you come in the area and you're into gravel, come here. And he treated us to beers. There's beer all over the tray there.
Well, we're going to hear a bit about the beer, the local beer, later on in Mitch's beer slot. What do you call it? We've got a bit of a thirst, haven't we, Mitch? Because we went for a bike ride today.
We did. I went over the Col d'Aspin. Heaps of cyclists out there. And I experienced firsthand how big the tour is today, because I remember speaking to you guys at the start as you drove off. My idea was to ride from the hotel to the stage, and you were like, I don't know if we're going to get blocked. You guys were talking about that at 10 this morning. I'm thinking, what are they on about? I went through in the bike, and I almost didn't make it through. It was only a 10K section. It was crazy, but it was really cool, again, to absorb that atmosphere and how big the tour is. And blew me away how far people would walk just to get to the bottom of the Tourmalet. The road was blocked. I got through on my bike. That must have been 10 kilometres of a normal road. A lot of people were just walking just to get to the bottom. It was quite cool.
You rode the whole way. I came in and met you. We rode about 20 kilometres together. That was a lot of fun. I was surprised that you were, you know, asking me to slow down a bit. And I mean, I know I'm quite fit at the moment. I've been doing a lot, but I must say that surprised me. A world tour pro, and you were clearly struggling.
I was hunger flat at that point and had a puncher, so yeah, I can imagine. No, it was great to know you were coming along the way. It really gave me motivation
to really get it all out before you met me. And cruise in the last 20 kilometers.
It was beautiful riding though, wasn't it?
Oh, it was beautiful, lovely roads, yeah. And you managed to plot a route for me that included very little climbing, which was much appreciated. Stage 18 then of the Tour de France, the finish up at Luzardaden, a very famous climb. Dag Otto Lauritsen won there, didn't he, in 1987?
Yeah. I mean, one of my most bizarre memories of the Tour, because when Dag Otto Lauritsen won in 1987, nobody knew who had won, and nobody knew how that happened, because it was so misty that day that the helicopters didn't fly. It was, you know, before the internet and everything. And so when this guy came out of the clouds, Dag Otto Lauritsen, nobody knew, you know, he had broken away. Nobody knew how it had. He's the only one to know, or maybe he doesn't know himself, you know, because it was so misty. I mean, the foggy day on the Tour de France it was.
Well, we still see him every day. I was staggered to believe that it was 35 years ago, because Dag Otto Lauritsen looks about 35 still.
Yes.
You know,
yeah,
I mean,
he
hasn't changed at all. I'm going to point him out to Mitch one day. Luzardaden as well, Greg LeMond and Miguel Indurain in 1990. Lance Armstrong in 2003, that's where he clipped or got his handlebars stuck in a spectator's bag. So it's a very famous, very beautiful climb in the Tour de France. The day began on a bit of a sour note, though, because news was broken of a police raid on the hotel of Bahrain Victorious, the team riding the Tour, obviously, with Wout Poels in the King of the Mountains jersey today. They've won a stage with Matej Morhec, lost their leader, Jack Haig. Sonny Colbrelli has been a factor throughout the race, and they've been one of the form teams of the year, and this news broke that their hotel had been raided by about 50 police officers from the Marseille prosecutor's office. That's the prosecutor behind this investigation. The police said that the prosecutor's office said that the investigation was opened on July the 3rd into the possible acquisition, transportation, possession, and importing of a prohibited substance or method for use by an athlete without justification by members of Team Bahrain Victorious. And that was the reason given behind this raid. We'll maybe return to this a bit later on. I spoke to Roger Hammond at the finish to try and get a bit more information. I didn't get an awful lot more information, but I know you've been following this closely as well, Francois. So we'll return to this story. But it's notable that it's the same, I think it's the same prosecutor's office as was behind the raid of Nairo Quintana's hotel rooms during last year's Tour de France, an investigation that was launched and kind of petered out.
Yeah, it is indeed the same prosecution office. Is it the same inquiry or the same investigation? It seems that it might be. And as far as we know, from the various sources we got, they didn't actually search the rooms too much. They were looking for the data of the riders. And so they went through their computers, emails and stuff. That's about what we know, which is not much.
They took their data, their training data.
Why were they looking for that?
Well, we don't know. It's a curious one, isn't it, that they were looking for their training data, apparently. But I'll return to my conversation with Roger Hammond a bit later on. The stage itself, well, they began in Pau, a very familiar place for us at the Tour de France. Early attackers, Chris Juul Jensen, who emerged overnight, had, along with Philippe Gilbert and Chris Froome, come to the rescue of an amateur rider who'd crashed and fallen and did you catch this story, Francois?
No.
Well, they had come to the rescue of an amateur rider who'd fallen some distance, and they helped him. We must find out a bit more about that. Mm. Matej Morhec of Bahrain Victorious, who'd been very bullish at the start, saying that it was the police raid had been a waste of time, and they missed dinner and massage and so on, and he was pretty bullish at the start, saying that they had nothing to hide and they were going to focus on the race. And he did. He was in that early move with Juul Jensen and Sean Bennett. There were counterattacks. Julian Alaphilippe, once again, we saw him on the attack, but there wasn't much getting very far. And in the intermediate sprint, there were four riders up the road, but Mark Cavendish won the bunch sprint behind that, ahead of Michael Matthews, to increase his lead in the green jersey competition. Alaphilippe and Moric were up the road as they began the Tourmalet. They had an advantage of 130 over the bunch that was led by UAE Team Emirates. There were a few French riders on the attack in between. On the day that Emmanuel Macron was in the car with Christian Prudhomme, the French president, of course, Pierre Roland, Pierre Latour, Kenny Ellison and Valentin Madouas were all trying to get up to the leading two. But halfway up the Tourmalet, a group converged at the front. And from that, Pierre Latour and David Godu, who we also saw trying yesterday to get up to the leaders, they attacked together and got away. And Godu actually went over the Tourmalet alone, dropped down the other side alone. He was off the front just when we saw him just before the climb of Luzardaden, but very quickly, really, he was swallowed up. It was Ineos Grenadiers who were once again sort of taking the race to UAE Team Emirates. Pogacar had one teammate, Rafał Majka, left, but Ineos Grenadiers were well, they had Dylan van Baarle leading a lot the way up the Tourmalet, and then Theo Gegenhardt took over at the foot of Luzardaden. There were a few riders struggling. Rigoberto Urán, who we mentioned at the start, Mitch, he had a bad day today and dropped to 10th overall in the end, so he's completely lost any chance of finishing on the podium. It was a very similar finale to yesterday's stage. Pogacar, Carapaz, Vingegaard were the three who made it to the finish together.
But I think different to yesterday, we had Sepp Kuss up there, which was, it was strange for me to see what he ended up doing, setting a pace for Vingegaard. I don't know.
We were watching that, and you were saying that you'd never really understand that tactic. I mean, Jumbo-Visma, there were five. There was Enric Maas was there as well. Mm. Jumbo-Visma had two riders there. Sepp Kuss went to the front of the group and rode pretty hard, and then was spent and swung off, and you were questioning that tactic or just unsure about what the point of it was.
I just sort of thought, you know, Pogačar clearly has shown that anyone riding at a high tempo is not going to drop him. He is the strongest climber, and that tactic I think only works when you have the strongest climber. And I don't know what would have been a better tactic, potentially waiting and attacking, but, you know, Sepp Kuss wouldn't have got chased. He potentially could have gone for the stage. And I feel like that Vingegaard has achieved better things when he was attacking and changing the tempo. Very easy to say that from the side of the road, but it just didn't seem like the best tactic for such a strong guy when he could have potentially gone for the stage. No, I don't think anyone would have chased him.
Had he gone for the stage, maybe Pogacar, who obviously wanted to win it, might have counter-attacked to try and chase after him. And then, if it caught him, then Vingegaard could have gone for the stage with himself.
Gets 5 minutes and wins the Tour. I mean, Vingegaard afterwards said that he had a really hard day today, that he was struggling. And so Sepp Kuss may have been riding like that in order just to keep the pace consistent, perhaps, to avoid the sort of accelerations that might have seen him off, because he apparently was struggling today.
Do you think that's what Ineos Grenadiers were doing? You know,
I don't know.
Comfortable tempo for Carapaz that he knew he could stay there.
I mean, a lot of people have been asking what they've been doing, because they've been riding in the way that they've always ridden as Sky and Ineos, where they, you know, they put lots of bodies on the front and set a hard pace. But you were remarking, Mitch, on how today, you know, when they had, you know, three or four riders at the front setting a hard pace, the group was still about 20, 25 strong. Whereas in the old days, it would have been 10 riders with half of them Sky.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, they dropped Rigoberto Urán, who was, in terms of the time trial in Saint-Emilion, who might have been a threat to Richard Carapaz. Now Ben O'Connor is behind him. In fifth place is Wilco Kelderman, who's not such a bad TT rider. But I think they, in a way, put Carapaz out of reach from the others, so the tactic, as strange as it might look, probably protects, you know, Carapaz's podium place.
Mm.
Well, this is an unconventional tale of the etape, but the winner was Tadej Pogacar. I should give good mention to Enric Mas because he was dropped, he came back, and when he came back he attacked, and then he attacked again, and he had a really good go to try and win the stage after having a tough day the previous day. He kind of bounced back today. Dan Martin behind was also chasing pretty hard, but in the end finished 24 seconds down in fifth. Pogacar won the stage ahead of Vingegaard, Carapaz, Mas, Martin and Kuss. No real change overall apart from Rigoberto Urán dropping down to 10th overall. Ben O'Connor moves up to 4th. Wilco Kelderman moves up to 5th. One of the main changes of the day was in the King of the Mountains competition, which has been really hard fought and really interesting. But Pogacar has, almost by accident, found himself in the King of the Mountains jersey, second year in a row. And he will now win the King of the Mountains ahead of Wout Poels, Vingegaard and Mike Woods.
The Cycling Podcast at the 2021 Tour de France, powered by Super Sapiens. Energy management for committed athletes and coaches. Still guessing on fueling? Not sure what or when to eat and drink on rides that matter? Never again. Optimize your fueling strategy with real-time glucose data, actionable insight, and personalized analytics. We are here to help you achieve your performance goals. Go to supersapiens.com for more on how to track your energy levels and fuel for success.
Thank you very much indeed to our title sponsor, Super Sapiens. Very grateful to them for their support. And in today's little Super Sapiens slot, we're going to hear from a guy you know, Mitch, Jack Thompson, the ultra distance rider who set off 10 days after the Tour de France, chased the Tour, caught it, overtook it, and when Lionel spoke to him today, he was on his way to Paris. Let's hear about his chasing the Tour, wearing Super Sapiens.
So my name's Jack Thompson. I'm a professional ultra cyclist. And basically we had this concept of chasing down the Tour de France. So I decided I was going to give the Tour de France peloton a 10-day head start. And then essentially ride the entire 2021 Tour de France route. And yeah, essentially try and catch them before Paris. So we're somewhere now between Bordeaux and France. We passed the peloton around 3 days ago on the 8th day of riding in Andorra while they were on their rest day. And yeah, we're heading up to Paris now to ride the final stage. So I use the Super Sapiens device to basically manage my blood glucose levels. Yeah, throughout an event like this, it's essentially a fueling challenge as much as it is a riding challenge. So the Super Sapiens device was a massive help in the lead up to the challenge and just being able to tailor a fueling strategy and then day after day just see where my blood glucose level sits and tailor the nutrition around that to ensure I'm properly fueled day after day.
That was Jack Thompson. Phenomenal effort. It's been one of the stories of the Tour, people doing alternative tours. We've had Lachlan Morton, now Jack Thompson. Whatever next? We'll maybe hear a bit more from Jack tomorrow evening, but he's on the verge of finishing his Tour de France, and congratulations to him. And he said how important Super Sapiens has been in helping him prepare and do the ride and be fueled properly. If you would like to enter our competition to win 3 months of Super Sapiens products, go to thecyclingpodcast.com and you'll see how to enter it there. Now, we were going to talk about today's stage, but Francois threw a curveball. He wants to talk about Wilco Kelderman.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's amazing. I was typing the results, a little bit earlier in the day because I'm doing the official book of the Tour de France and I have to type the results of every stage every day to fill in the book. And I noticed, as you would, and as everybody, or maybe nobody did, that Wilco Kelderman is the fifth overall, which is an amazing performance. And he hasn't won a stage. He hasn't been in too many breakaways. He's not been competing for the Polka dot Jersey. He's not been in contention for the most aggressive rider, or any, he's just been riding his bike.
He's been in contention for the least aggressive rider. No, I'm joking. That's really disrespectful because early on in the race, quite visible.
He was visible in the early stage in Britain. He was there with the guys, but I mean, it's been quite. It's the way he rides. We know the way he is. We remember the Giro last year when he kind of lost his leader's status to Jay Hindley. And It's the way it is, but it in a way is even more discreet than a very than a hero of ours, who's Aymar Zubeldia. And I'm kind of wondering if Wilco Kelderman keeps going this way, we might not end, you know, calling this kind of shadow racing a la Kelderman.
A la Kelderman. More might than replace a la Zubeldia.
Yeah. So, I just want to... I'm not, you know, downplaying his performance at all. I mean,
it's always a tricky one, this, isn't it? Because to finish fifth in the Tour de France is a phenomenal...
It is.
...performance it is. And achievement.
I'm not joking. I'm not downgrading his performance. But the way you achieve that, he does it through... Yeah, anonymity in many ways, more than by, you know, just consistency.
I mean, he avoided the very early crashes. He crashed yesterday and had blood on his face and was a bit bashed up. So, you know, he's not had a completely smooth ride. But, yeah, in honour of him moving up to fifth overall, we should hear from Wilco Kelderman. Let's hear what he said at the finish today.
Yeah, it was not great. After the crash yesterday, I felt a bit sore. But anyway, yeah, it was a big fight till the end. You know, this is the last mountain stage, and then it's all out. Emu and Patrick Conrad were also really good today, so they helped me really good. And it was really nice that Emmanuel was there in the end. Yeah, he brought me till the last 2K, so that was actually perfect. I think I can maybe move one spot when it's possible, and otherwise fifth place is also good, so we'll see. Saturday, last big fight, and then we'll see in the end.
Wilco Kelderman, Mitch. I mean, you know, if you're a GC rider and you finish fifth in Tour de France, that's a huge result. It's worth a lot of points, I imagine, for his team. And it's a great result on his palmarès. But in terms of visibility and so on, as Francois says, he's not been somebody that we've been talking about. So what's the value in that for the team if we're not talking about it, if it's not getting the publicity that the team needs?
I think there's two things in that. You know, we were saying that was very similar to what Rigoberto Urán was doing up until 2 days ago. You know, he was playing the consistent card, not necessarily attacking and just always being there. And all of a sudden, he was sitting second on GC. I think at the end of the day, yes, you've got these 3 weeks of talking about it, but it's the end result that does have a big impact as well. The teams can also hinge off that later on, maybe not in the public eye, but definitely in the sponsor's eye. I think it's also been interesting to see what's happened with Bora Hansgrohe since Sagan has left. It's almost like they've really flourished and got these great results. They're going to end up with a fantastic GC result. Maybe that would have happened with him still here, or maybe more, I don't know. But it seems like some kind of weight's been lifted, and the team's just really kicked into gear and sort of seen the best of them this year.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That's the voice of Sam Piquet interrupting tonight's coverage from the Tour de France to remind us to tell you that this episode is sponsored by Stitch Fix. Now you're ready to go get back outside, but your wardrobe says otherwise. Get some much needed style updates with the help of Stitch Fix. Shopping for clothes can be daunting. You never know if things will fit. Returns are difficult, and you don't even know what stores to start with. This season, let Stitch Fix do all the hard work. I was a Stitch Fix customer before I moved away from the UK. And in fact, the shirt I'm wearing now is a Stitch Fix shirt. Do you like it, Mitch?
I do, actually. It was very, very similar to the shirt I was going to wear tonight.
Well, what an endorsement that is. Wow. The shirt you're wearing is very sharp indeed.
So that's saying something, that we've got similar taste and Stitch Fix has the right taste.
Oh, I like it. You could almost set up a rival, Mitch Fix. You could. I don't want to take the competition away. But so Stitch Fix is an online personal styling company that makes getting the clothes that you love effortless. It's a completely different way to shop that's all about you every time. To get started, go to stitchfix.co.uk/cycling to set up your profile, and then they'll deliver great looks personalized just for you and your colors, styles, and budget. You pay a £10 styling fee for each fix. That's credit towards anything that you keep, and you can schedule delivery at any time. No subscription required. Shipping, returns, and exchanges are easy and free. Stitch Fix does the hard work for you, making great style effortless for men and women. Get started today at stitchfix.co.uk/cycling and you'll get 20% off when you keep everything in your Stitch Fix box. That's stitchfix.co.uk/cycling for 20% off when you keep everything. stitchfix.co.uk/cycling.
We have got a very, very special segment, beer segment tonight. I tell you what, the craft beer game is so strong in the Pyrenees. It's so good. We've had too many beers to choose from. I picked up beer at the corner today. When I say I did, Richard bought it, so that was great. But we've arrived at our beautiful restaurant tonight for dinner.
Leviscos, the famous place to listeners of the Cycling Podcast. I think some of them have actually been here, but it's a place we've been before.
I'm very much looking forward to it. Richard's been talking it up. But first, before we get into that, let's talk about beer. And I've got Aurelia, restaurant manager, to run us through these beers and tell the story. He was going to tell me the story about them, but I thought, hang on, even better, how about you run us through these beers, these beautiful beers you've got tonight?
So this beer is made from Luz, where you were today, just at the base of the Ardiden. The story behind is a guy, he was a para-Olympic champion on downhill skiing. He's have a problem of vision, so, but he's dedicated to make good beers. So he's making, that's why you have this 3-star on the label, because he was a 3-star world champion on the para-Olympic game. So you have a classic IPA, you have a blonde triple, and you have an ombre triple. I don't know how you say it. Amber in English?
Amber.
Okay. And you have an amber toy rin. So toy rin, toy is the name for the toy country, is where Luz is, the area of Luz, Gavarnie and Tourmalet. It's called the pays toy. So the taurin is made specially with water, which is coming down from the Tourmalet, from Barège area, the city which is at the base of the Tourmalet. And he actually told me that he's trademarked the word taurin. After that, I'll let you test. Because
what is the actual name called? Paytoya.
Paytoy. That's how you call it. And it's the where we're making is called Milflore, which is used to be like a pharmacy chemical office in Luz. It's a true story.
Wow.
When he buy it, he found he was behind a pharmacy shop, and he find that's what we call Milflore.
They look great too. They got fantastic labels, all different colors. A green for the IPA, purple for the triple amber, a beautiful orange label for the triple blonde, and a red label for the amber taurine. These look fantastic. Oh my gosh.
There's more. How much
it's
beer?
It's just for the...
This looks fantastic.
You see, it's funny because you can, like you did the call every day, you can ride the beer.
Fantastic. I'll get Richard to take a photo of this for everyone to see, because this is worth seeing.
Beautiful case.
It's pretty heavy for you to bring back home, but yeah, it's cool.
Oh, we can try.
All right, well, let's crack one of these open and do a quick taster. Ooh, that's lovely. I'm drinking the taurine, and it's like a lager, actually. This is a really good everyday, just slam it down, probably 4 or 5, you know, in the afternoon before you really get serious.
4 or 5 bottles or 4 or 5 o'clock?
Both. And yours?
I've gone for the ombre triple, and it's very sweet. It's quite dark and sort of treacly and sweet, but delicious, really delicious.
I went for the blonde triple. I mean, I had one before you arrived, actually, guys. And look at that. Well, as you say, this one is very blurred as well. So
sort
I suppose it's
dull,
unfiltered.
Yeah.
Because it's, but yeah, a bit sweet to my taste, but still, you know, very tasty. Yeah, good stuff. You can tell it's the real deal. Like it.
So listen, fellas, second mountain stage on the day with a win for Tadej Pogacar. There's no question at all now that he will win the Tour de France. Have the French had a good Tour de France, Francois? I mean, Julian Alaphilippe won stage one, but David Gaudu has had a go today and yesterday. Overall, have they had a good tour?
I think the answer is yes, actually, as odd as it may seem, in terms of stage wins, it's not as good as it was last year when we had Nance Peters winning a stage and more stage wins. But if you look at the GC, It's better than it was last, well, last September. It's always strange when it's last year, when actually it was last year. But if you look at the results, Guillaume Martin, is moving on. You know, he was 12th 2 years ago, 11th last year, and he's now 8th overall. So he's getting there. I mean, where is he getting? Probably to the maybe top five one day. He's probably not, you know, a guy in a position to win the Tour. But at least, you know, is progressing. David Gaudu, I mean, he, as I said, he had a bad day on the Ventoux, caused him a lot of, you know, losing lots of time, lost about half an hour that day. He's still 11th overall. He was on the attack yesterday. He was in the attack today. As he proved in the last Vuelta winning stages, that he's not far from these guys. And we've got Aurélien Paré-Peintre, the kind of teammate of Ben O'Connor for AG2R Citroën, who is 15th. So three guys in the top 20 is the same result as last year, only a little bit better. Well, and if you take into account the fact that Thibaut Pinot is injured, Romain Bardet is not doing the Tour. The little disappointment might come from Julien Alaphilippe. We expect him a little bit more of him, especially in the first week. But the problem with Julien Alaphilippe, and it's going to be his problem now for a long time, is the range of his abilities, which is kind of, you know, the punchy stages with a hard but short climb at the finish. This is where he's always doing well. Flash is the typical, not even Liège, but Flash Wallon riders. But in that kind of races, he has now to face two, you know, real phenomenal riders, Wout van Aert and Mathieu van der Poel. So, in a way, excuse me, we could say that, you know, Mathieu van der Poel, being the grandson of Raymond Poulidor, is kind of the national pride, you know, in a way, in this Tour de France. He held the yellow jersey for a week. By and large, I'd say that, you know, it's up now to the new generation, because the Pinot, Bardet and all these guys, maybe even Julien Alaphilippe, kind of belong to the kind of waning generation. I think Gaudu has really did what he needed to do. He attacked. You can't really say anything about that. He did his best. Pierre Latour, unfortunately, attacks, you know, when it comes to his mind and not when he should be doing it. He's like a little bit too... I don't know.
Impulsive.
Impulsive is the word, yeah. And you know, he would need to curb down his mad dog, you know, approach to cycling a little bit. With Paré-Peintre, you know, he's getting there. I think this AG2R team, I mean, as we discussed in the kilometer.
Well, nice plug, Francois, because today's Kilometer Zero was on AG2R 30 years. This is their 30th year in the sport, so. Today's Kilometer Zero was all about HDR, and we had an interview with Paré-Peintre in there.
Absolutely, and they believe that there are a few signs, like Yvon Madieu at the beginning of the Tour, his group MI FDJ team director, told me that within 3 years they were expecting to have a young guy of 21, 22, you know, playing, you know, a major role as a GC rider. So I don't know if he has somebody in mind, but he thinks that they're getting there. AG2R as well are working on the number of good climbers for, you know, for GC positions. So I mean, this is promising for French cycling for the time being. Well, let's face it, we haven't found yet the new Bernard Hinault, that's for sure.
Well, you've been saying that for 32 years.
I know. But I'm going to retire soon, so I guess that the jinx will be broken.
I wanted to know if Macron in the car today would have obviously yesterday was the 14th of July. Today with the president in the car, it did seem that the French riders were trying to put on a show, although they're also, you know, Groupama FDJ have had a pretty awful tour. A lot of teams have had a pretty awful tour. A lot of teams are going back at the moment with nothing, which could be an interesting day tomorrow in the break. I mean, Mitch, you've been in, we were speaking about this earlier, but you've been in teams that, you know, get towards the end of a grand tour having not come what they came to do. You know, what's the atmosphere like, and what is the feeling like within the team as you kind of approach the last couple of days?
It's a hard thing. It normally starts into the last week, I'd say. You know, the last rest day, there's sort of a bit of a meeting. You know, you always go into the the rest days typically have a team meeting, you know, in the afternoon of that rest day. Where are we at? What have we done? What are we going to do? And the first rest day is always a bit, you know, easy going, no matter what's happened in the first week. Long way to go, 2 weeks to go. Don't worry, boys. Changes very quickly in that last week if nothing's happened in that second week. And there's a different dynamic there. A bit more pressure is applied. Doesn't necessarily help. Because you always, there's no one out there slacking off, sitting at the back just going, oh, we don't want to do anything. Obviously, we're trying. It's just not happening. And the last week, the pressure's applied. And it doesn't, when the pressure's applied, things don't miraculously happen normally. And when you get to the end, like I said, the pressure keeps getting applied. Everyone keeps, you know, missing breaks, not doing the sprints well or whatever it is. And you always have this sense of relief when you finally leave the race, when you finally travel home and jump on that train or jump on that flight. And when you get back home, there's that sense of relief the Grand Tour is over. You always get that no matter what happens. But then it's like, wow, it's good to get away from that environment. That's the feeling I've always had.
But have you ever been on a team when you have managed in the last few days to produce something to just make you get to the end and realize, and at least reflect on having achieved something in the race? And has that ever happened for you?
A really good example, and I'm trying to think of Jumbo Visma at the moment, because they're down to four guys. And a couple of years ago, we spoke about this crash with Rigoberto Urán in the Vuelta. We went down to five from, might have been stage nine, I think, something like that. It might have even been slightly earlier. And we had to readjust, and we had Sergio Aguita there. We had Lawson Craddock, Logan Owen, myself, and Danny Martinez. And Danny and Serge were the only two guys on GC, and Lawson was going for breaks. He couldn't quite get the win. And Serge, I think it was stage 19, won the stage. And that was that moment. Okay, we didn't have to do anything because we only had five riders and essentially the pressure was relieved a bit. But it was amazing to see the relief between not only us but the staff, because they're working just as hard as us. Everyone forgets that, even the riders too. And they appreciate that victory, that result, just as much as you. They feel it. They want it.
Mm.
And it was beautiful. It allowed us to roll into Madrid and just really be relaxed and enjoy it. And the beer became just that little bit sweeter, you know?
It's funny you say that, because I think I was with Daniel. We went to your team's hotel after Pierre Roland won a stage at the Giro a couple of years ago. And it was 2 years since they'd won a World Tour race. And it was an amazing atmosphere there that night, because it wasn't actually the riders, it was the staff. The staff were, it was just a weight had been lifted, and there was a sense of just massive relief that you had there just being in the team hotel.
It's great. It's really great to see. And it's a nice reminder of how invested the staff are in what we do. You know, they do so much. You know, the mechanics are out there working till the midnight, and the soigneurs are not only just massaging you, but they're running around doing everything, and they're invested in that. They're doing everything a minute percent that probably doesn't make any difference, but they want to make it perfect for you. So it's great to feel that payback almost in a way.
But there'll be a lot of teams here where everybody on the team, staff and riders, are just kind of wanting to go home now, I think.
Well, tomorrow I think is going to be an interesting day for that fact. It's a flatter day. Should be a sprint, but I think it's going to be a fight purely because of that reason. And we're going to see some other things come into play, I think. Some weird things that you find at the end of this tour. Teams start chasing for teams GC or trying to get in breaks, chasing breaks back because they need to be in it. And probably UAE won't have to do much at all tomorrow, I can imagine. Being a sprint stage and all these other weird sort of games that teams need to play to try and get something out of this tour.
Science in Sport is supporting the cycling podcast at the 2021 Tour de France. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science in Sport, our long-time sponsor since 2016. Very grateful to them for their support. If you want 25% off all your Science in Sport products, go to scienceinsport.com and at the checkout, enter the code SISCP25. SISCP25. If you want to enter our competition as well to guess the winner of Sunday's stage into Paris, then go to thecyclingpodcast.com, and if you are one of the people who select the winner, you have a chance of winning £80 worth of Science and Sport products. It could be Mark Cavendish because he's made it through the Pyrenees. Again, you know, some people didn't expect that. He's not ridden a Grand Tour for several years. He didn't train for the Tour de France. Didn't think he was riding it. So quite an achievement. And we talked about Pedlar Ducharme last night, and a lot of people actually have nominated Tim de Klerk for Pedlar Ducharme for the work he's done in this race. And the way he has helped Mark Cavendish through these tough stages. If you look at today's results, the Koenig Quickstep riders came in together, five of them: Michael Morkov, Tim de Klerk, Dries Devenens, Davide Ballerini, and Mark Cavendish. The final five places on the stage, 32 minutes, 6 seconds behind. But, you know, those four riders were looking after Cavendish and doing a fantastic job. So Tim de Klerk is a very good nomination. I have to mention as well that I had a message from Stacey Snyder today. Stacey makes the beautiful cups, mugs, gelato bowls, beer cups as well. Mitch, you would probably like, I know you've got a mug already, but you'd probably like a beer cup as well, wouldn't you?
It's a ceramic beer cup,
yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. Very popular. Right.
Yeah. Lovely.
Yeah. If you're listening, Stacey, I know you will be. Mitch would love a beer cup. Stacey did say that she feels like she needs to correct the record about the last batch selling out in 3 minutes. She said it sold out in about 8 minutes, which is still breathtakingly fast. 3 minutes would have broken the previous record of 5 minutes by 2 minutes, which would be on another level and probably raise some questions about illegal performance-enhancing activities. So on that subject, the big story this morning was Bahrain Victorious and this police raid. As we said earlier, it comes from the same prosecutor's office as was behind the raid on Nairo Quintana's room. It was Nairo Quintana, winner Anacona, and I think his brother Dyer Quintana last year, a little cell within Arkea Samsic. That petered out. Nothing ever came of it. Did it?
No. As far as I know, I mean, and I live in Marseille, and I know the, legal and police authorities there. Nothing seemed to come out of it, but you never know with these kind of inquiries. They can drag on for many, many months and many, many years. Is the Bahrain investigation linked to that Arkea Samsic investigation? We have no idea whatsoever. Well, it's very, very early to jump to any conclusions. As you know, prosecutor's offices and the police are very secretive, and that's kind of normal. So, what were they looking for? What is it linked to? We have absolutely no idea. Of course, I mean there had been talk, and we on the podcast talked about it. You know, kind of questioning the wave of success by Bahrain Victorious riders. I mean, Mark Padoon and a couple of other guys. But once again, you know, performing well and doing all right and winning stages that is not proof of any wrongdoing. And so, for the time being, we you know, the only thing we can say is that, and I think that's the only stand we can make at this stage is. Police raids in hotels for, you know, in riders during Grand Tours, and especially during the Tour de France, have become part of the job, you know, of being a cycling pro on the World Tour. There is always an ongoing investigation. There's always guys that and also the Tour is kind of a big screen even for anti-doping authorities to say, hey, look, we're doing something about it. Will anything come out of it? It's really impossible to say because we don't know what they were looking for. We don't know what the charges might have been. We don't know if there was anybody, you know, where does it come from? You know, there can be denunciations at times. We actually have no clues for the time being about what's going on.
What's the legal stance there in terms of the police able to come in and just do those raids? You know, do they need some kind of warrant or suspicion, no. Or is it they no. can just raid
no.
anyway?
Yeah. There was a little Bahrain issued a statement about the what happened, and you know, the and saying nothing really was. I mean, the, no rider was arrested, or you know, they were allowed to go on, and they said no warrant was issued. But in French legal system, you don't need a warrant especially for drugs offenses. So it's the kind of charges for the investigation are pretty vague, you know, you spell them out, and there are two authorities in France who can act without any warrant or whatever, you know, and especially in the drugs dealing, which was kind of the case, and customs officers, and very often, you know, in drugs or dope related offences, you see the customs officers acting, and customs officers can really almost break into your home and search and look for anything they want without any warrant or without any authority, you know, kind of any control. So I mean, the procedures we saw that are not unusual and are not, you know, illegal at all. I mean, smuggling doping products or dealing with doping products is a criminal offense in France, and if you know, the police have grounds to believe that you might have been involved in that sort of a business, then they have every right to do what they did yesterday.
Mm. Well, I mentioned I spoke to Roger Hammond at the finish. He and Rolf Aldager, two of the people that run that team, and he really played it down. I mean, he said that they really just seem to be interested in the riders' files. Somebody who offered a slightly different interpretation of it was Matej Mohoric, the rider, who said that, you know, they seized things, and Roger Hammond said that he'd seen it reported that he'd had his phone taken, but he demonstrated that he actually still had his phone. So yeah, he really played it down. But Matej Mohoric was a pretty angry figure at the start in Po and at the finish. Let's hear what he said at the finish. Kate Wagner was up there at the summit of Luz Ardennes, and she was one of a number of journalists speaking to him there.
And so it's kind of interesting that there was so much activity considering, you know, what happened last night. I kind of thought all of you guys would lay low.
No. We were trying to make our point because we have nothing to hide, no?
Exactly.
The only thing we have to do is to prove our value, our worth. We play on the even field with all the others, and if you hide the trillion, then I don't know. That makes no sense to me, no? I mean, I will always, okay, maybe some days I save my energy and then some days I really try to invest everything I've got, but then it doesn't mean that those days I have a special help or something, you know. It's super disrespectful, but on the other hand, once the investigation will be cleared, no, I hope that we are really proven to be one of the best teams and that good results can be expected of us, no?
The team has gone to the police, or I mean,
yeah, why you guys?
I don't know.
Why has this came about?
Yeah, it's hard for me to comment. I don't know who made the claim or whatever, who ordered the warrant, but this is not my responsibility. I cannot comment on that. I'm just here to focus on the race, and I have nothing to hide, so I don't care. But, I mean, it's a little bit weird, no, and a tricky situation, because yesterday I felt like a drug dealer, no, like a proper drug dealer, but they also went through my phone, through my everything, no?
So what happened then? Can you just talk us through, like, was it 10 o'clock and they knocked on your room? And what?
Yeah, just like 50 policemen appeared in the hotel all around. I don't know how many, because I didn't count them, but many, and they just searched through everything we've got, every single one of us. So yeah, they took also some phones and some computers, so some guys are left with other phones, with other computers. They're sealed in plastic bags as evidence, and they were told that they will see them in 2 months again, so I don't know what's going to happen. Yeah,
that was Matej Mohoric. It's a story that we will, I'm sure, continue to follow, and if we hear any more about it, we'll obviously say it in the podcast. But I'm not sure anything will come out for the last couple of days of the Tour de France. Francois, we're in the Pyrenees, final day in the Pyrenees today. We head up north, well, towards Bordeaux tomorrow, don't we? Another sprint stage we expect. But what have you got for us in the way of culture and songs and words, moments, riders?
I have a few things, of course. I mean, the word of the day for me would be miracle, which is the same word in French, miracle. We pronounce it differently, but it's the same word.
Only slightly different. Sounds exactly the same to me.
But yeah, anyways, we went through Lourdes today, Lionel Burney's favorite city. Well, lots of well, lots of people's favorite city, but we all know about Lourdes, but you know, Saint Bernadette, Subaru, you know, had an appearance of the Virgin Mary, and you know, and so all this business of religion in Lourdes started. So miracle, I guess a miracle today would be for Tadej Pogacar to lose the Tour de France, but you never know. You know, we're in an area where miracles happen. I mean, I suppose Jonas Vingegaard and Richard Carapaz will be hoping for a miracle to happen before the end of the Tour, but we really don't really believe, something. And in a way, we hope nothing happens. You know, Pogacar dominated the Tour.
I Believe in Miracles going to be your song?
I might have done this one, but it won't be the song. You see what the song's going to be.
Is this the place also you can buy the water?
Yeah, of course. You can buy water. You can make huge candles, yeah. Also to dedicate to the... I mean, you've never... Have you been to Lourdes Basilica before?
No, I was just there at that town in a month ago at La Ocotane. We stopped there and there was all these bottles of water for sale. And I'm like, come on now. I'm not buying water.
It's a real
only craft beer.
Lourdes, everybody knows. No offense to believers and people who come to. I mean, a few miracles happen in Lourdes. I mean, they're very well registered and credited, and fair enough. But it's true that the whole industry around religion, around miracles, and around is a little bit, let's face it, over the top. And the town is all about little plastic figurines made in China or whatever of the Virgin Mary and stuff. It's a business there, and. But it's part of the thing. And all the area where we are, I was actually totally changed by the fact that, Bernadette saw the Virgin Mary, and now it's become an industry. It's become a very touristic area thanks to that. So thanks for the Virgin Mary and Bernadette in terms of tourism. I mean, it brings people around, and maybe it brought the tour here. Who knows, Anyways, the song will be, of the day will be linked to that, but we usually finish with a song, so you see what it is. There's a cheese of the day after the beer of the day. The cheese of the day is called Osso Irati. Osso Irati, also known as Esquiru, is produced in northern Basque Country and in Béarn. And we are in Béarn here. And actually, the name reflects its geographical location, the Osso Valley in Béarn and the Irati Forest in the Basque Country. It's one of the cheeses that's been recognized as an Appellation d'Origine Contrôlée, AOC, since 1980. It's one of three sheep's milk cheeses granted AOC status in France. You've got two other sheep's milk cheeses granted, appellations in France. There are Roquefort, everybody knows Roquefort, and Brucio. Brucio is in Corsica. The Osso Irati cheeses of ancient origin, and it's traditionally made by the shepherds in the region. So it's been around for a long time, and maybe we'll see later in the day for a dinner. Maybe we have a bit of this. Curious fact of the day: the Tourmalet. We've been up the Tourmalet today. I mean, the riders rode it and we drove it. Richard drove the car up. We followed the course actually going down to Luzardiden. It's a classic, climb of the Tour de France, which means in French originally bad detour. And he actually earned a bit of fame as early in 1675 when King Louis XIV's mistress, Madame de Maintenon, went up it in a sedan chair. I mean, she was not, so there were four guys, obviously carrying the sedan chair up the climb. So they are the real pioneers of climbing.
It's like the Cunning Quick Step today.
It's like the Cunning Quick Step. But so why did she go up the Tourmalet? Because she was actually looking after the Duke of Maine, or the king's son. I mean, he was a bastard son of the king. And he had problems with his legs, and they thought that the waters here in Barège were good for his legs. So to get to Barège, the quickest way was to go up the Tourmalet. And so they went up there with a sedan chair. So there are four guys who carried these two people, the Duke of Maine and Madame de Maintenon, in that car, carrying the thing for well, how long is it, 17 k's up and the same down. Well, unknown pioneers of the Tourmalet, their names never stayed in history. Yeah. When they actually were, you know, the guys doing the job. Actually, I mean, this you know, little episode started the trend for waters and spa in the area. So, well, I mean, I think we should honor the memory of this unknown, you know, by of the Tourmalet.
By drinking lots of water.
Yeah. Well, we haven't
fermented
been doing
water,
that.
Yeah. With malt and...
A last little homage as well to a Tour de France rider called Raymond Mastrotto. He was sixth in the 1960 Tour de France and winner of a stage in Pau in 1967. And he came from Ney, which was at Kenouman 19th of the stage today. When he won his Tour de France stage at home almost in Pau in 1967, he was called the Bull of Ney. You know, there was his nickname. He was surrounded and pushed around, you know, by the crowds and journalists. And apparently, podcasters of the day, they came around him and with their notepads and microphones, as you know, and some stepped on his feet, you know, and he was, so he shoved them away and he said, "Hey, I'm not going to win another one tomorrow." So, meaning, you know, Get away from me. So that was, you know, Raymond Mastrotto. And of course, we slept in Campan or near Campan, in Lac de Payon last night. And Campan is very famous for Eugene Christophe, you know, but the story has been told a million times.
It has. I'm sorry, I'm struggling to shake off the image of de Klerk, Markov, Ballerini, and Devenans. Carrying Mark Cavendish in a sedan chair up the Tourmalet. I don't think that actually happened, but something close to it.
Nearly.
So, listener, we're going to play out with a song of the day, Francois.
Yeah, so we were in Lourdes, and we're talking a lot about religion. And if you go down to Lourdes, and some of you have done it, you see nuns all over the place. I mean, there are more nuns in Lourdes than any other people, and so I thought I should sing the famous hit song by the singing nun. If you remember, I mean the
Sister Act.
Yeah, the older guys. You know, remember the singing nun was a totally strange hit record in the 60s. Sung by a real nun with her guitar, and the song was Dominique, and it went Dominique s'en allait tout simplement, routier pauvre et chantant, en tout chemin, en tout lieu, il ne parle que du bon Dieu, il ne parle que du bon Dieu. Dominique s'en allait tout simplement, routier pauvre et chantant, en tout chemin, en tout lieu, il ne parle que du bon Dieu, il ne parle que du bon Dieu.
Well done. Thank you, Francois.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mitch.
Thank you, guys. Looking forward to this dinner.
Oh, yes.